My name is Eileen McIntyre. Today is Thursday, February 11th, 2016. I am in Key West, Florida, visiting at the home of my brother John and his wife Colleen. I am talking today with my sister-in-law, Colleen Ryan McIntyre. Good morning, Colleen.
Good morning, Eileen.
You were born in 1953 and were the first daughter in a family that would include two younger sisters for you by 1960. So tell me more about what your family was like.
Well, my parents, Ellen Clays, and my dad, Francis Buddy Ryan, were met and at the age of 14 and were married and had me when my mom was 19 and my dad was 21 in the Navy. And not with her during most of the pregnancy. She lived with my grandparents, who lived in Edgewater, New Jersey, Alice and Gus Clays. They had emigrated here from Nova Scotia in their middle 20s. And so I lived with so I was born, my dad made it home, hitchhiked all the way from Norfolk, I believe, could be wrong, and he was there and stayed for a while, then left, went back to his post, and my mom and I lived with my grandparents till probably I was about 3 or 4. And then my dad came home, and we moved to an apartment in Englewood, and that's where we lived until my sister arrived.
That's Englewood, New Jersey?
Englewood, New Jersey. And when I was in first grade was when we actually moved to a house that my dad had built on Highland Street in Englewood. And that's where I lived until I left for college. And even my parents sold the house probably when I was in my early 30s. So it was a family home. And it was where my sisters were born. My sister Terry was born right before we left the apartment in Englewood. And that's where I grew up, where I walked to St. Cecilia's Elementary School, which was about a mile away every day, and where I went to high school, I walked the same walk for 12 years.
Well, I've already learned more about you, Colleen, in terms of your early life than I had known before. That's fascinating. So you mentioned walking to grade school at the parish school, St. Cecilia's, which is where I also went to grade school. What were your interests in school that you recall?
I loved to read. I always had loved to read. So I liked, and I loved the library, even as a little kid. So maybe art. Actually, I remember in third grade, Mrs. Conklin, I don't know if you had her, she did this art appreciation where you had a picture of a famous artwork and then you would write a little story about it or a description. And you had it in a little binder. And I looked forward to that, which kind of gives a hint as to what I actually majored in college. So that was pretty interesting. I was an art history major. So that was my first exposure to artwork. And then the other memory I have is when I was in eighth grade, we lived around the corner from these two women. And they were unmarried, and very interesting. One was a teacher, one was an artist, a graphic artist in New York. And they were really kind to all the neighborhood kids. They took us on hikes every Sunday. And they also took a few of us into the city. So we had to get dressed up.
And when you say the city, that's what we call New York City.
And I went to the Museum of Modern Art for the first time, and I was in eighth grade. And that was life-changing.
Well, that's fascinating. Yeah. Wonderful to hear about that sense of community that, that neighbors had. That's really delightful. Did you have some responsibilities involving care of your younger sisters at that age when you were in grade school?
Well, you know, my sisters, my sister Terry is 4 years younger, and my sister Lisa is 7 years younger. So you don't think of 4 years as a lot of time, but it really is. It can make for separate feelings. And so I would babysit, but I started to work a regular job at 14. I was a dental assistant for my dentist. My mom actually got me the job. She thought I would like it, and it was steady. I went every day after school and on Saturdays, and I worked for him through high school into college.
So was this primarily bookkeeping and making appointments and greeting people, or did you actually help the dentist in other ways?
I helped the dentist. Yeah, he was left-handed, and I'm left-handed, so we worked kind of well. We did four-handed dentistry. He taught me, things I had to do, develop x-rays, make appointments. Well, the one job I had, which I absolutely hated, was vacuuming. But answered the phone and did, and that was, and it was a steady job. I walked to, it was within walking distance of the house. So then I would walk up to work, and then when I got my paycheck, I hit the bank on the way home and then went home. So the opportunities to babysit were not as important. My mom was a stay-at-home mom, and my dad was a fireman in town and worked side jobs. He's a carpenter, so he was busy a lot, working a lot. And that was my mom's job, was to raise the family, be home, make dinner.
Yeah, and that was very typical of the time, certainly. What do you think that your parents might have wished for you, their firstborn, their oldest daughter, as you were a young girl, or what their expectations might have been for you?
I think my dad was very much interested in us going to college or some sort of vocational training or anything after high school. So it was never even discussed. It was just assumed that you would be going to college. And my mom felt the same way too, though I think that her upbringing was very parochial and provincial at times, so she couldn't see on a larger scale.
But your dad, I guess, had more exposure because of the Navy to the world out there.
Right. So he had traveled outside of New Jersey and had experiences that made him realize that there's something more out there. And he, I think because he was an early father, his own aspirations might have been cut short because of family responsibility. So I always I now know that he almost felt deprived that he didn't have that opportunity or couldn't see his way clear to taking advantage of, say, the GI Bill or other opportunities that were out there that suited his skill set more than being a fireman.
So his training after high school was on the job kind of training.
Was on the job, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, so. But my mom was a great supporter of all of us girls, and she wanted, I think, us to find happiness in that 1950s kind of way. Find a guy and have a family. And college was important. A job was important, but I think the ultimate goal for her, would we'd be married and married to good men and be able to raise a nice family.
Yeah. And I remember your mom fondly, and she was a happy person, so I think she probably realized that made her happy, and she was wishing that kind of happiness for you girls, so that is delightful to hear. Now, when you did go to college, things were starting to change for women in the U.S. more broadly. Talk a little bit about your college experience.
Well, I went to Fordham University at Lincoln Center, which was a different campus, and it was a new experiment. The focus was going to be on arts. I commuted to school, which was another thing, taking the bus to the city every day.
That would have been at least an hour to get to school each way.
Right, then coming home and working.
Yeah.
And I stayed there for 2 years, and the reality was there, I was a declared art history major early on, so the department was contracting, people were leaving, and I felt there might be better opportunities elsewhere for the type of study. And so applied to Finch College, which was a small women's college on the Upper East Side of Manhattan, 78th and Park. And they had a very strong art history program. And because of my background, I was a demographic for them. So they offered me a scholarship. And I commuted 1 year, and then the second year I lived at school, which opened up wonderful possibilities that I never would have had. And there were about 400 women, all very strong-willed, feisty women. And my closest friend today is my college roommate, Mary Jane Eimer, and she's a perfect example. We were encouraged to be, to go out and take care of ourselves and get a job and make a career and live in the city and contribute that way. The only downside is that Finch closed the year that I was graduating, so people were scrambling, faculty members were scrambling, so I decided that graduate school in art history might not be the best career path. And I probably, because a little bit of my upbringing, I was a little reserved about it. You know, where would I get the money? How would I? It just seemed overwhelming for me to figure that out. So I decided to become a librarian. And it was probably a very pragmatic decision. You know, library school, Pratt, Brooklyn, a 2-year program, you're out, and you can get a job. Which is what I did.
Pratt Institute, it was called then, and the library science was one of their
majors. It was one of the oldest library schools in the country. And so I commuted there, and I had a job in Leonia, New Jersey, as a dental assistant with a different dentist this time. And I worked full-time, 9 to 5, and then went to graduate school in Brooklyn. And then I lived on East 63rd Street in Manhattan.
That's a lot of commuting.
Yes, it was. A lot of commuting, and it always taught me to have a book and a hat and mittens with me all the time. I was always on a bus or in a train. But it was great. I met a lot of different people, had a lot of different experiences. And I always say that Finch allowed me the opportunities to travel. I went, I took a semester abroad in Italy and spent all of my classes at the Met or at the Frick, and it was a wonderful life. It truly was at the time. A lot of studying, a lot of art.
Wow.
It was great.
So then you got your library science degree, your master's in library science, and then what did you do for work after that?
And then I got a job as a librarian, a little niche thing for a textile company. It was M. Lowenstein, and it was on 40th and Broadway, and it was one of the larger textile companies. And they had a design library collection that dated from the early 1800s. To what was then 1977, but books, printed designs, swatches, and that was the biggest thing. We had a swatch collection, and when I took it over, it was the woman I took over from went to the Frick. She had the same background as I did. She was going up to the Frick, and she had had a master's in art history. So I was there. I didn't intend to stay long, but we did. We made some changes, and then something changed in the corporation, brought in some new people, and they felt that this was a real jewel and a gem, that they should take care of it. And so we moved facilities. I went downstairs, bigger space, and basically was told, you know, here, do whatever it takes. So I recataloged things, the swatch collection, and the book collection, and I wrote a newsletter to let stylists know what was happening in New York art-wise that they might find interesting to help with designing their coming collections. fabrics.
And they made fabrics for what trade? Were they making fabrics for garments, for home design, for what was their...
For everything. So there would be women's wear, men's wear, bandanas, I remember, pajamas, when men wore printed pajamas. They were printed textile designs, and sheeting. Wamsutta sheeting was a division. So there was a little bit of everything. So at the start of every season, the designers or stylists would come in and say, this is the feel for, I'd like 18th century small florals, monotone or, you know, colorful, tightly drawn, or one year it would be very free and flowing. So you develop a story with the swatches that you had in your collection. And books, anything that she could give to her artist to say, this is the vision I have for this. And you would do this with every department. And so, and they would have, and we also had a picture collection or a photo collection. So if something was pop culture, you might have pictures of sneakers, or I remember some guy did little kids' shoes, and it was always looking for the hot new thing, like Legos or something, needed a drawing of it so he could put it on the sneakers and stuff.
What a fascinating field for you to get into, combining your training and interest in art history and your training and interest in being a librarian. How fortunate you were that you stumbled into this and had that opportunity then to really expand the library and work with creative people.
Mm-hmm.
So that must have been really stimulating and, you know, a fun place to go to work.
No, it definitely was. There were, I would say, about 50 artists on the floor. And with every artist, even though they're working on these designs, they have their own work at home. So where if you talk to people, they lived very interesting lives outside of the office, art and very interesting art lives. A lot of them were from Cuba and from China, from Russia, so, and Belgium. They had this other layer too. So it was a truly multicultural, wonderful place to work. And I stayed there until I had Casey. And then circumstances were that Casey was a challenge physically, her health. So I stayed home. And I stayed home until I went back to work many years later.
So just to back up for a second, so you had been living on East 63rd Street when you were doing that crazy commuting back and forth. So now you had the job at Lowenstein's. Did you stay living in the city during this time?
I'm trying to think. Yeah, I did. I lived on 14th and 1st. For a while, and then I lived not 14th and 1st, 14th and 6th, right above the Burger King on the corner, but now it's not a Burger King, it's some sort of market, and it was a difficult area then, very dark, drug-ridden, but I had a loft space in the back on the third floor, and it was great. I could walk to work, which I did, and I walked home. And then I moved on up to 86th Street for a little while. And that was 86th and 5th. And then I moved in with John.
So how did you come to meet my brother, John?
Well, we have a long history. I actually went to grammar school with Doreen.
Youngest sister.
She was a classmate pretty often, even when they jumbled it up. We managed to be in classes together. And Rosemary was a year ahead.
So that's another one of my sisters, Rosemary.
Right. And I think we were involved in brownies at some point together. But Doreen's really the contact. We were in school till 8th grade. So I knew of the family, but I didn't. John was older, and so I didn't really know him. And then at some point, I was coming back home. You know how it was when you were younger. You were in between apartments. And I took the bus. And I knew your dad, So your dad would get on the bus in the morning, and then John would get on the bus in the morning. And sometimes he would sit with me. Sometimes he wouldn't. And I like to read, so I was hoping most times that he wouldn't, because I didn't want to have to talk at all. But after a couple of months we would chat. And then he was in the same business, textile business, so there was a commonality there. We knew some people. And I was interested in racquetball at the time, and he suggested I go to the racquet club in the Grace Building on 40th Street, right across from the library, which I did. He showed me around, and then he never called. So, and then a couple of years later, I was on a subway late at night with a friend of mine, and we were headed to New Jersey, and I guess I must have looked different, or because I was with someone else, I have no idea. But the next day, John shows up in my office to say, "Hi, how are you? It's good to see you." And we chatted, and he'd stop by occasionally. Oh, he was a salesman then. So it was kind of nice, Reeves, because he was always in the neighborhood, and they were out in the market, is what textile people called it. So when he was out in the market, he'd always stop by. And I was thinking of leaving Lowenstein. I had thought I wanted to get into photo editing, and I had interviewed for a couple of jobs. And he said, "Well, you should always give your employer first stab at you, first chance." I said, and this is what I didn't have growing up. That's an important thing, is the ability to talk to someone about business and maybe how I should plan a career as opposed to letting it just happen to me. So he gave me some really good advice, and he said, "Be confident and know that, you know, that you're worth it, and they just might give you what you want, which is more money at that time." And I did, and I got a raise, and I stayed. So we dated for about, you know, 10 months, then got engaged and got married. But I never forgot that. It was like, that's the kind of advice that, as my girls got older, I always tried to impart, which is, you know, talk it over with people, feel confident about your skills. My dad used to say the worst they can tell you is no, but I think you need some very concrete strategies in order to ask for more money or a different situation or applying for a job or interviewing. So we talked a lot about that with the girls.
So you have two daughters, mm-hmm. Casey and Jane.
Yes.
And I know you stopped working. Casey had some health issues as an infant, and mm-hmm. and you really focused on that as good parents would.
Mm-hmm.
I know at times it was fairly stressful for you and my brother, as I recall. But Casey and Jane have turned out to be wonderful, strong young women. How do you think the way you raised Casey and Jane? You hinted a little bit at this, I think. Is the same and different from the way you were raised?
Well, first of all, let me say I am so proud and so lucky to have Casey and Jane.
They're just strikingly beautiful, but really strong women making their way in the business world now.
Right.
It's really interesting to see.
That's the most important thing, is that they're each doing something that makes them happy, and that they're good at, and that they know they're good at it. And I think my parents tried to do that as much as they could. I think they were hampered by the stresses of the time, you know, trying to keep everybody in Catholic school uniforms and a tuition for a Catholic high school, which, you know, for them was pretty expensive. It was a big deal, trying to save for college as well. So I can look back and say that I think my parents tried to give us every opportunity that they could see.
Yeah, and certainly times were different, and you're right. I think my parents as well. Just the responsibility they had for their children really came first, but it was a lot of hard work to keep the food on the table and the clothes on our backs. So different vision of what the paths might be for their children.
Yeah, I always thought if I could be as good a mom as my mom, who was really selfless. I mean, she would do everything
Yeah. And this is
in the hard limitations that she had. She always made sure we had, you know, a dress to wear on a special occasion, that we looked nice, that things that, you know, I know now as a parent were probably pretty challenging financially for her. And it was just...
Yeah, and certainly we talked about this earlier, that with your family and with my family, that none of us felt that anything was... that we lacked for anything.
No,
in spite of the fact that our parents really had to scramble to keep us presentable to the world. And we always felt like we had special clothes and things, even though they may have been hand-me-downs or consignment shop specials.
No, they worked very hard. And I think that when John and I had the girls, we had the same thing. We'll work hard. Of course, money was a little different. Our situation was a little different, but the girls got into swimming, which, having been somewhat athletic growing up, and the only alternative, not to be disparaging, but the only alternative that I had was being a cheerleader. And no one ever thought of, like, oh, well, gymnastics might be something you could do, or track. It was before Title IX. You never had that opportunity. So I thought, you know, it's something that I would have liked to have had as a part of my identity growing up, is that I'm good at this and have the opportunity. So Casey was really interested in swimming, and she was very good at it. So that became a big part of our lives. Jane was just pulled along, and sometimes that's a little bit of a regret, because maybe her identity would have been something different. But Jane was phenomenal at swimming, so it was kind of hard to just say, throw it to the side. But I think that we traveled a lot. They met. We always encouraged them to reach out and talk to other girls from all over the state of New Jersey, to be outgoing, to know that there's a whole world out there, and you just have to sit and think about where you want to go in it. Which I think they did. I think they both, even though they have different paths, have felt confident enough to try different things and to be expansive in their lives. And I'm happy the way things are going.
Much to be proud of. It's fascinating to see these young women who I knew as babies and then young girls, who were always, as you say, and I think thanks to their exposure, outgoing and happy and interested in talking to people about all kinds of things and mm-hmm. creative, and yet. I couldn't see where they would go career-wise. And it's interesting to see Casey succeeding in publishing, a fairly competitive environment, doing very, very well. And Jane in business school now, working on her master's. It's very exciting to see these young women emerge. So I appreciate, Colleen, what you and John have done to contribute to the world, these wonderful creatures.
Thank you.
So your dad is—it's wonderful. He's still alive, and in a way, he's kind of the patriarch of our family now too, because our parents are gone. And I wonder what it's like for him to look at these young women and think about how different their opportunities are, their lives are unfolding in different ways than it was the case for his daughters. In terms of opportunities, things have changed a lot. Any perspective on how your dad might view these wonderful granddaughters of his?
Well, I think he's very proud. He always says that, you know, that it's just wonderful that Casey and Jane have found their way. And I don't know if he... I don't think it's unexpected with him. I think it was just like, of course my grandkids will be wonderful, because my kids were wonderful, and everybody works hard. I think that that's a value that my father really appreciates is hard work. I mean, he always has said, you know, if you work hard, you'll be successful. And, you know, he talks about John all the time, that John works really hard. And around the yard, around work, he always seems to be involved in something. So, and the same thing for the girls. I think having three daughters himself, his expectations were that you're just as good as a guy, and you'll always, you just have to find out where you belong. I don't think there was any delineation ever. And I don't think there was any regret that he didn't have a son. And so I think with his granddaughters, he's glad they're here.
Yeah, well, he must be really, really proud. So this has been so delightful, spending the last several days, almost a week with you and John here in Key West for the first time, but also getting the opportunity to talk to you, Colleen, and learn so much more about my sister-in-law. So thank you. Anything else you want to add before we finish up today?
No, thanks, Eileen. Thanks for coming. I enjoyed your visit with Roy. We had a great time, and I look forward to maybe doing this again when I'm a little bit more comfortable.
Well, you were wonderful. So much rich information about your early life that I didn't know before. And I wonder if Casey and Jane know all of this. So I will share this with them. Thank you, Colleen.
Thanks.